I'm Joanne Wilson, and this is Positively Gotham Gal. Small, meaningful conversations with women entrepreneurs about their approach to life, business, and everything in between. Christine Quinn is the president and CEO of WIN, Women in Need, the largest provider of shelter, permanent supportive housing, and services for homeless families and children in New York City. A former mayoral candidate, Christine is the vice chair of the New York State Democratic Party and served for 7 years as the elected speaker of the council, making her the first woman and the first openly gay speaker, as well as the highest ranking LGBT official in New York City history. And I want to tell you that we literally had 4 pages on Christine, but we cut this back to a paragraph. Her dedication to government and giving back to people, which she has literally dedicated her entire life to, is insanely impressive. So I'm so glad you're on this podcast.
Me too.
Your career has been really interesting in politics. You've stuck to a theme. You've always cared about women and children.
Right.
And families. It's always been something that's near and dear to your heart. And I think being a politician is an extremely entrepreneurial venture.
You know, yep, I agree.
Who you surround yourself with, how do you manage those people, how do you get from point A to point B to point C? And, you know, I'd like to sort of talk about your journey. So you went to Trinity.
Right. I went to Trinity College in Hartford for college. And it was kind of the perfect place for me to go to college. One, maybe it's still this way, when I went there from 84 to 88, it was very conservative. So I was in a kind of a small group of lefties, which I loved. You right. know what I mean? Because you were whipping things up and people were paying attention to you because there wasn't a lot of you. So I love that. And then it was the Capitol. I must have gotten a semester's worth of internship and independent study credit. In fact, they tightened those rules up right after I left.
No more of that.
No more Chris Quinn. But I learned a ton just being in the State House, working with the Public Interest Research Group. You know, I just learned a massive amount of kind of the reality of advocacy.
And your desire came from your father.
Yeah. So my father would tell you that I was cursed with clarity, that all I ever wanted to do was kind of activist social change work. My father had been a shop steward in his union. He was an electrical engineer, but if you really ask him what, he was a shop steward, and he went on strike twice when I was a kid. My mother, before having my sister, had been a social worker for Catholic Charities in Manhattan. And so all her, although we had moved to the suburbs, her social work friends were always coming around and telling lots of stories. And I think the two together, kind of created the vision and interest I have. And also my sister is 10 years older than me. She's 60. She's a geologist, right? So not a big women field, particularly for women who are 60, and she's extremely successful. My mother didn't tell us we could be successful. In a kind of not demanding way, said, figure out what you want to do and you will be successful. And she didn't really care what it was,
right?
But you had to have a passion and you had to do it amazingly. And I think that fueled both of us in our individual interests. But it's so great for you to use the word politics and entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. Because I think people think there's this prescribed way of being a politician or an elected official. And if you think that, you never really are effective. Because one, the world's changing, right? How we communicate with each other, you know,
at
is
a
changing.
Rapid rate.
And also, limiting yourself to kind of what actually may be in the charter of the city of New York for your job isn't going to get anything done.
Right.
You need to think more broadly. And you need to also think kind of in a real evidence-based metric way. Because legislation and policy should be solutions to a problem.
Mm-hmm.
They shouldn't be a solution seeking a problem to fix.
No.
You see a lot
of that. Well, it's very, and that's a very great, actually, I love that because when I think of entrepreneurs who are coming up with companies and ideas, at the end, you have to have an idea.
Right.
Many have these concepts that are like shoving a square in a circle.
Right. And they love them.
Right. But it doesn't work.
Doesn't work.
I mean, a circle has to go into a circle right. And then actually other people are going to use it.
Right. Exactly. And so we really, when I was in government, we tried to really bring that to the speaker's office. So one example is we literally, when I became speaker in 2006, I had council members whose district offices kept track of constituents on index cards and shoeboxes. It like makes my mind explode now to think about it. So we, you know, hired a consultant, et cetera, built out CouncilStat. So everyone now is on one computer system. They put all their data in. So it's not like I'm trying to steal a constituent from somebody else, but how many people called about this, that, the other thing? We can now know, the council can know, is that a borough-wide problem, a city-wide problem, a district problem? And then that would really help us focus our policy researchers on creating solutions to the problems New Yorkers were calling us about.
You know, one of the things that always blew me away and has stuck with me is that we talked about the nonprofit world.
Oh, yeah.
And how there are thousands of nonprofit organizations in the city, and many of them replicate each other.
Right.
And I was like, why can't we just like bring in, you know, two kids from Columbia Business right. School, two right. kids from NYU, like give them this project for the summer and figure out how, instead of thousands, right. there's only a couple hundred and the impact is more intense. And you talked about this one organization in Harlem that you gave $2,500 right. a year to that impacted that street.
Right, right. In nonprofit work and in advocacy work and in government, I don't mean this in an insulting way to some people, but it's a very hard thing for many people to do. You need to hold two ideas simultaneously. One, that we have too many groups that replicate each other.
Way too many.
Of size, right? Those are usually groups of size and significance, which means charitable donations. We should fix that. But then we also have a world of smaller groups that are block by block or that are profoundly culturally competent, and you need them. Mm-hmm. And I think government has been a bit stymied by saying, well, we can't get rid of these little ones. No one's suggesting that, right? But we do need to look at the world of duplication. Just this morning, I was on a conference call with my two co-chairs of the WIN board, the homeless service organization I run now, and we were talking about research because we house 10% of all the homeless families.
Right.
So what we see is statistically significant. And we were talking about, should we build out a research department? To some degree, we should. But to some degree, we should also find a way to couple with a group that is a research group.
Right, that's already doing this.
Right. Now, we have the data from clients, which is powerful and real. But I don't need to have, you know, a $2 million research department just to have it if somebody else can work with us on our data.
Right. Well, it's interesting. I mean, I have a friend who has a nonprofit organization in Malawi. And she said, her generation, mm-hmm. she's younger, is that people are sharing resources.
And that and it, is where we have to
right,
go.
Which used to be like, this is my car, I got right. the money, we don't share. Right. And so now by sharing, the money that comes into the country is much more thought about and how the impact can be made.
And sharing with a recognition of what you have as a group, what you must have that's core to your mission, and then how to involve others. So I'll give you an example. At WIN, we have homeless shelters, right? People stay there. So they're buildings. They're buildings that happen to have poor people in them. Somebody said to me recently, don't you think it's bad to use the word poor? I was like, they know they're poor. They live in a shelter. They're you're like,
yeah,
stop
they're poor.
With this thing. Are people poor? But anyway, I digress. So our clients desperately need more mental health care and primary care. So someone said to me, well, why don't you become a Medicaid provider? I would rather stand on the West Side Highway and get hit by traffic.
Right.
But there's people who do that, who are doctors, who are psychiatrists. So as we're building new shelters, I want to build them with more rooms than we can fill right now. So then a medical provider can come there. I don't need to be the psychiatric assistance to all homeless families, but I need them to get it. So it's also thinking about, like, I have the power of physical structures.
Right.
And how do I use them to bring in other experts? And I think there's this belief sometimes in the nonprofit world that bigger is by definition better. What we need to be thinking about is efficient is by definition
right.
better.
By the way, startup companies do the same thing.
Exactly.
You know, why do we need to... And again, it's changed. So 10 years ago, you built your own servers or you brought all that in-house or
right,
you
right.
brought in all of these tools in-house.
Right.
And now as these companies are becoming more mature and technology has changed, it's like, why did we spend that much
right.
money? Let's get rid of that department.
Right.
Let's bring in someone who already does it and cut our staff by hundreds of people.
And focus. Then you're efficient. Then you're focused on really what your super skill set is. And then it allows you to kind of see potentials you didn't see before. So last holiday time, we do this gingerbread event with Robinhood, who's one of our made funders, to whom we're very grateful. And so the kids of Robinhood donors and board go make gingerbread houses with our kids. And it's lovely, and you can't tell one child from another, and Robinhood gets a Santa and, you know, photographs, et cetera. And so I'm taking the Robinhood donors and board on a tour. And one of the gentlemen says, is there Wi-Fi in this building? And I nearly like fall over laughing. I said, no. And the city doesn't Wi-Fi.
Which is utterly ridiculous.
So at one of our shelters in East Flatbush, the kids are all by the laundry room because there's a hot spot there. Great way to say you're going to do great in school. Right. And we've tried to even do check-in things by email or whatever, or text with some of our high school kids. You don't get replies because they don't have service. So by really focusing, then it creates the space to say to this particular investor, no, but we'd love to. And then that conversation is evolving. I can't fully announce it yet, but to something more of like the vision of a smart city. For smart shelters.
Right.
This shelter system is part of our city now. So why can't we see ourselves in the greatest level of efficiency, the greatest level of data collection, like there is a movement across the country to do? And I think when you get focused on your mission and get rid of the other things that other people can do better, it creates the space for real entrepreneurship. We in this country still think entrepreneurship is about technology.
No, it's about everything.
Yeah, or it's about making quick money. It's not. It's a vision towards greater service and greater efficiency, in my opinion.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I mean, first of all of those shelters should have the same...
Totally.
Everything that everyone else does because of how do we help the children?
Right, exactly.
I mean, then you're not breaking any cycle here.
And that's our goal at WIN, is to break the cycle of homelessness for mom and for the child. In our shelters, and we have 10% of all the homeless families, homeless children, we've seen through data, are twice as likely to be homeless adults. And
I'm
fact, 2 out of 4 of our mothers were homeless themselves. So... why wouldn't you want to seize every opportunity? But also, over half of our mothers are working. And do we want them always have to be? Yes, we still have computer rooms, right?
Of course.
Which close at a time. And that's good for some of the kids because we do different things. But shouldn't we be able to get donations of iPads, which Google and others are happy to give us, and have mom sit in a room with her kids while they're doing her homework, be looking for jobs online? We have a very good specific income building program. But if she has to schedule time in the computer room and then she's away from her kids, it's just ridiculous. No one lives like that.
No. Well, they make it much harder for people that are underserved.
Correct.
And then the generation coming up can only be what they can see. So, you know, it's just this endless cycle that doesn't allow what America is supposed to be, which is the land of opportunity.
Right. Because we're envisioning service and structures at the most rudimentary base level. And you know what keeps you at the rudimentary level of your life? If all you're given are rudimentary assistance and a rudimentary training, and if no one is challenging you to do better. And the other thing, you know, I have to say we have a young woman we're working with, and she's about, I don't know, 18 or so, has a baby. Challenging situation. So she was very shut down. Baby wasn't going to the doctor. She wasn't going to the doctor. Nonetheless, thinking of getting her high school diploma and going to community college. Now, one of the things about WIN that I do think is also reflects an entrepreneurial outlook is we started working with that woman and we weren't like, why won't you go on the subway? What happened on the subway? Why don't we go on the subway together? Her caseworker just started taking the subway with her and then took the baby on the subway with her. Now, everybody's going to the doctor and getting out in the world. And at some point, she'll tell us what happened on the subway. But when she's not ready, you have to take people where they are.
Yeah.
Now she's getting a high school equivalency and is soon, I hope, to get a scholarship from the city's Department of Youth. So I think we have this belief that for anyone to succeed, they have to be like a particular definition of what
a formula.
Right. A formula of an American citizen or a formula of somebody ready to go, as opposed to looking more broadly and saying, you know, here's a problem. We're going to address it.
Totally.
And recognize that by addressing this, we will eventually get to the bigger problem. If we just wait around to try to fix the huger underlying problem, you're going to waste a lot of time.
Right. So let's go back. So you started in politics.
Yes.
And when you ran, were the city
council speaker.
I mean, you took that role and you literally, in a very entrepreneurial way, changed that role forever.
Yeah.
It was literally something that it was just like, whatever, someone runs it. We're not sure who, but it's a job in the city. And you made it very vocal and you made it very impactful. And I was always insanely impressed of you literally knew what was buried in every rock.
Yeah.
So then you went forward.
Right.
You ran for mayor. It didn't work out.
Right.
And, you know, that's a major thing. Like even like, you know, major thing. Yeah. I mean, particularly entrepreneurs who end up their companies go under, you know, how did you, and I think people would want to hear, how you, did you make that transition?
So, and you know, and anybody who tells you their company goes out of business, oh, and it was no big deal, or I lose a major thing, they're lying.
Right.
Right. So one, it stinks. It really, really stinks when things like that happen. And the best advice I got after losing the mayor's race, and thankfully we were in a financial situation where we could do this. My wife, Kim, said, don't look for a job. Don't look for a job for at least a year.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah. So this was traumatic, whether you want to admit it or not. You need, she said, and on top of that, you worked like a dog for 8 years.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah. And I loved it. But she said, you have to decompress. You have to just spend some time figuring out what you want to do next. And we have that, we had that latitude. And she was 100% right. And because you're like, well, what will people think? What will people think? She's like, A, who cares? Right? They've thought good things about you. B, do what you want to do just for a year. So I joined not-for-profit boards, the National Institute of Reproductive Health, Athlete Ally, the Tyler Clemente Foundation, women, LGBT, young people, bullying. And that was great because I stayed involved. But I also could have a distance.
Right.
And when I was a kid, I grew up on Long Island and there were little stables everywhere. So I took horseback riding lessons. And Kim said, you love that. We never had Prime. We have a house down in Jersey, not far from horse country. She said, go start taking lessons.
That's so awesome.
Yeah. And it was. And I'm like, like what? They sometimes call old people who are riding the flying fossils or fossils. Watch the fossils. The dinosaurs coming through, kids. Get out of the way. Haven't done this in 30 years. But it's been great. And it kind of reminds you there's stuff beyond what you were embedded in.
Right.
Now, also, I got a fellowship to the Institute of at the Institute of Politics at the Kennedy School. And it was fun.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Did not know that.
And I'd never heard of the IOP, which now, like, how could that have been? But on one day, three people said, do you know about this program? You should apply for it. So I thought, okay. I don't have to be hit over by a head. Apparently, I should go for this. So I did and got it. And it was a semester in Boston. The program's amazing.
I'm sure.
And that program really reminded me, because there's these young people there. And I know everybody has this vision of Harvard and Silver Spoon, and whatever. It's not like that. I mean, it's really diverse, actually. And I met the kids that I was working with. They'd accomplished a ton. You know what I mean? By 18, 19, 20, some were creating companies, some were transgender individuals from, you know, down south. I mean, people from other countries who were fighting female genital mutilation. And it was, to some degree, like cold water in my face. Like, you know, it doesn't matter what your title is. It matters what your focus and your vision is and how, you know, committed you are to it. Because these young people had no quote unquote fancy titles, but they'd done so much. And also it was good for one's ego because the kids up there don't think like you're the one who lost. You're like, oh my God, you're that lesbian who went so far. Tell me all about it. So there was that. And I really was re-energized and less focused on having lost this title, but having the opportunity to do more with all that experience. And that's, and actually in things, how they sometimes do work in life is that's when I got the call from a friend who said, she got a call from a headhunter. Would you want to apply for WIN? And I knew I wanted to run a nonprofit of a size. I wanted it to be urban focused, women focused, and based in New York. And I wanted it to do service and advocacy. Because it was really that connection.
No, it's the perfect.
And it's perfect.
I mean, literally, there couldn't be a more perfect spot for you.
But I want to say for folks who are listening to this, it took time. And I remember I went to see Andrew Cuomo, the governor, after I lost. And he said when he lost the governor's race, it took him a year before he began to feel like himself. And I remember, I screamed at him, yeah, that's the worst thing I ever heard. And he said, well, it's true. So don't beat up on yourself. And a friend of mine said, which was good, she said, you're going to have to go through every season. You're going to have to think, I did this when I was speaker in this season. I could be doing this if I was mayor in this season. And they were both right. And people just need to give themselves that latitude if their company goes out of business, if they don't pass their PhD defense or whatever it is.
That's an interesting, I mean, I love the Billie Jean King comment that she used again and again. And yeah. I read about it that she used it again when she did the commencement speech, right. Which she says failure is feedback.
You know, that really is true.
And I love that.
And that's really true. And as I look back on the mayor's race, and I want to be very clear, like when you're a candidate, the buck stops with you. Right. And so I look back and the feedback that I got, among other things, was I needed to get out of my head. I was so worried about what the city of New York was going to think of this kind of tough lesbian that I was always trying to modulate, you know, present myself in a appropriate way where you were tough, but not too tough. Well, all that does is jam you up in your head.
Well, I think that's in general, not only being a lesbian, but right. For women in general. Oh,
absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, I mean, you walk into a room of men and you're just like, okay, I got to be tough, but I don't want to be a bitch.
Right.
You know, and I got to show them I know my stuff, but I don't want to be too aggressive here. And it's a very, very difficult set of rules.
And when you end, yes. And when you end up being so focused on the rules, you're not yourself. And in the case of the mayor's race, look, maybe they wouldn't have liked full on Chris Quinn, but they didn't like controlled Chris Quinn.
Right.
And I think when I was speaker, I was much more myself. And that was really important feedback. And the other feedback I got was to listen to my gut. There was a point in the campaign when I remember saying to staff, something's changed out there. It's just not right. And they said, well, it's not like the bottom's fallen out. Look at the poll numbers. You're still going good. And I said, no, I think it has. I think the bottom fell out. And it wasn't the staff's fault. They had all this data. They were right on the numbers. And I needed to push. And not that I'm against data and all that, but everything is a combination. Mm-hmm. And so I think I've really learned to trust my gut.
Well, I think that that's so important. Yeah. I mean, I hear that from entrepreneurs all the time. I just knew it.
Yeah.
I knew it. I knew in my gut this was wrong. And, you know, particularly when it comes to people that are investing in them.
Right.
Or people they're hiring. They're just like, it doesn't feel good. Right. It's like, if it doesn't feel good, it probably isn't.
I once hired a communications director at the council who was terrific, turned out to be great, because he used to be at Channel 4 and New York 1, and he interviewed me once about the Irish Lesbian and Gay Organization not getting in the parade. He's not LGBT. And I said, when our communications director, prior one, who was great, left, you know, usually panic. I said, no, I'm going to call so-and-so. They're like, well, why? And I said, I'm going to offer them a job. They said, why? I said, because the look he had in his eye when he interviewed me about the gay group being banned, he gets me. He gets it. And he was one of the best hires I've ever made.
There you go.
Totally unorthodox. Every HR class in America would tell you not to do that. Now, you don't want to do that always. But when you know.
But I am actually a huge fan of hiring people on their skill sets. And many times, I think it's good to have a couple people in your organization that have never done this before.
I agree with that.
Because they have the skill sets for it.
Right.
But they come at it from such a different angle, it actually changes everything up.
Completely. And you need fresh eyes. You need different eyes. You need fresh eyes and fresh questions.
Yeah,
And what you don't need, and I say this to people all the time, like, if you think it's wrong, tell me. Ask me a question. You know, because the last thing you need if you're in a kind of CEO position is people yesing you.
It's the worst.
The worst.
And it's interesting. I've seen so many companies where they, you know, fire someone or get rid of this person that they know is bad for the organization. And then everyone comes up afterwards and goes, oh, thank God.
Right, right, right.
And it's just like, why didn't you tell me? But that's not what people do.
No.
So exactly, you've been with them for how long now?
Over a little over a year and a half. So November will be 2 years.
Right. And would you ever go back to politics?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
That'd be great.
I mean, yeah. I love Wynn. And let me tell you, if and when I'm an elected official again, which, you know, I hope it's when, but we'll see. I will be a million times better because of having done this.
I'm sure.
Because I can see rules and regs and laws we passed or agreed to that seemed so good on paper and are so burdensome to the work we do. And I can also see things that existed during my 8 years as speaker that I didn't know about. Because I think if you're, to some degree, if you're not in the trenches, you don't always know the right questions. Now, you're never as an elected official going to be in every trench and know every question, but to know you don't know.
Right. Well, you know, I think that is we're seeing particularly,
hello.
Hello in the country today is that people only care about one or two things.
Right. And you know, for me, the fun and the excitement and the potential comes from people. And people taking that amazing risk of sharing their story with you. Mm-hmm. And when they first do it, they don't know you. You may become friends, you may become colleagues, but that's where and where the greatest elected officials succeed is in knowing they don't know anything.
Right.
And seeking to get all the knowledge they can from New Yorkers or Americans or their staff or experts. And I think part of the problem with this president clearly is he has no idea what he doesn't know and can't accept what he doesn't know.
They all seem to, even the Republicans in general, that you can just tell from this whole healthcare thing, which is the Democrats want to help everyone.
Right.
They're not doing a very good job at it.
Right.
They're not very buttoned up. And as you said, you had this feeling in your gut things weren't going well. Yeah. My gut is Hillary did too, but she didn't do anything about it. She stayed with the status quo of how her husband got elected, how she got elected as senator, but everything's changed.
Right. And then I also think the other mistake the campaign made is they did that while simultaneously saying they were going to kind of live and die by the algorithms that had been created. Nothing is absolute in any business venture.
Ever.
And so that they couldn't figure out how to wait it all and figure it out, I think really caught them kind of trapped in a no man's land.
Yeah. Yeah. The whole thing is so unfortunate. It's crazy. I can't. It's like.
It's crazy.
It's crazy. It's just crazy.
And you want to kind of go, America, okay, was she the greatest candidate? No. But really, she would have been a great president. Like that, you could guarantee.
No doubt. Even the numbers show that.
Yes.
The people that vote.
Knew.
And the Democrats tend not to vote.
That's a problem.
Which is crazy.
Problem, right.
And, you know, perhaps that will change.
Right.
So let's end with, what do you think is going to happen in the city? We've got, you know, now de Blasio is a mayor. Right. I could say a lot of things about de Blasio. And there's a lot of things that I think have also to do with the big picture what's going on in the country.
That. I agree with that.
You know, we've got a tremendous homeless problem here.
Right.
I think one of the things that Bloomberg did that was amazing is that he allowed this growth in areas like Brooklyn and Queens so that people aren't heading off to the suburbs.
Right.
These neighborhoods are safe.
Right.
The school systems are better. There are support systems into these places. But, you know, we obviously can do better and better and better because we're in the ultimate capitalist society and we're always changing.
Right.
You know, where is New York going? And, you know, are we going to be killed one day because the water's going to come over our boundaries in New York? The city will never exist anymore.
I mean, I don't think that's going to happen. But let me tell you, when I left city government, we'd done work on resilience, but there was a lot more to do. You know, and one of the things often governments don't do well is walk and chew gum, right? They become obsessed in the crisis of the day and whatever the New York Post has had on the cover, you know, for the past 4 days.
Right.
That you need. And this is something that Mike Bloomberg did very well. And I didn't always do as well as speaker, but I really feel I'm doing much better at now as at Wynn, is hire good people and let them do their job.
Right.
Right? Because it's nervous making. Because what if it goes bad? What if they make a mistake?
Well, I think that has always been one of your issues. And if you can do that, that's fantastic. Because micromanaging is going to get you nowhere.
Correct. And I, you know, now like I bring a lot to Wynn, particularly my political experience, my kind of outlook on that, you know. Like I got there and people be like, well, we do it that way because the city didn't want to do it the other way. I was like, well, screw the city. Like we have OS 10% of the people.
Right.
We have power here. Let's go use our power. But I'm not a social worker. You know what I mean? And I can go through issues with our vice president for transitional housing, but she's a social worker.
Right.
And I don't need to learn to be a social worker. So this job in a way is quite humbling.
Right.
Because there's stuff I can bring and then there's whole areas where what I need to do is hire the best person.
Right.
And I'm really learning that in a big way. So the city needs to learn that, right? To let people do their thing. And Mike Bloomberg was quite good at that.
He was amazing at it. I think that literally putting out all those ropes and let people do whatever they can until they hang is the reason why New York is where it is.
And you know, people made mistakes. And Mike Bloomberg, to his credit, was extremely loyal. Extremely loyal to people, even when there was mistakes around the way, which, by the way, no good CEO of a company ever had their first company be their hugest hit. There were always setbacks around the way. So I think our city needs to learn to do that. we also need to learn to less live and die by the press. One, there's totally a million other ways to communicate with people now. Two, problems take time to develop and problems take time to solve. So like in homelessness, I would argue the city is too focused on getting people out of shelter. But you know what happens when somebody gets forced out of shelter too quickly? They either get sent to a housing to live somewhere independently that is substandard, or they don't have the skills.
Right.
We should, you know, whatever number of people there are in shelter, that's the number of people who need a shelter. What we should judge ourselves by as a city, for example, is how many people come back. Because that's the real level of success. But we come obsessed by the moment's crisis and lose longer term vision. And look, I think there is clearly still economic growth at the higher levels going on in New York, which is good. But we still have too many people who are minimum wage workers. We need to actually engage our whole city. And we're seeing it win in our income building, our job training. We asked, you know, well, actually Gourmet Garage came to us. We asked Whole Foods. Gourmet Garage got us Fresh Direct, and they're paying for culinary license training for our mothers.
That's awesome.
It's $500 a class, right? So when that, and that's a job tract. On a much higher level, a mayor or governor can do that, but they need to kind of pump their chest out and say, this is serving the city. People always say, you never say no to a president of the United States. Well, you would to this one, but make it so you never say no to a mayor or a governor of New York. And I think that'll help us walk and chew gum.
Well, when it comes to housing, and I think we talked about this years ago, you look at East New York.
Right.
You know, I mean, if we want all of the people who work here that can't afford to live here to get here and to be part of the community, from a super of a building to a policeman to a teacher, we need to provide housing for these people, or we need to have really good transportation.
Right. Right. Or both.
Yes. Actually, both.
Yeah. And, you know, the professions you just rattled off, not so much police and fire, but we have a very significant number of city workers in our shelter, as
I'm
all
sure
shelters
you
do. Yeah. And so we have two big shelters in East New York right next to each other. Down the block, we're building 161 units of supportive housing for formerly homeless families, permanent housing with services, and then 96 units of that, the rest affordable housing.
Which is amazing.
Amazing.
We need more of that.
And people say to me sometimes, well, supportive housing, having the services on site, isn't that a lot of money? And I say to them honestly, have you ever had a therapist? Did you ever go to a shrink? Did you go to a psychiatrist? Do you have a nanny? Do you have a cleaning lady? Do you have a personal trainer? You live in supportive housing. You just can pay for it yourself.
Exactly.
So isn't this better to spend the money there and keep those families in independent living? So I applaud the governor and the mayor for having invested money, and we're going to see a growth in supportive housing. We need to be more efficient, though, because the hardest part is the real estate. So if the city could almost be like a broker and pull together properties that groups like mine could afford, that would be huge. But that's going to help us grow. But we also need to think, and you see the challenge right now. You know, no council member wants a zoning in their district because it's bigger buildings, even though they're affordable. We need to challenge our thinking. And if you want lower rise buildings, even if they're affordable, then you're 100% right. We need to figure out transportation.
Yeah. I mean, these are infrastructure issues that have been ignored for so long.
But they all intersect. Because if you're going to build more transportation, then you're going to have more jobs.
Yeah.
You know, I'm glad to see the proposal we had in the council on ferries moving forward, because that's relatively cheap transportation.
And we need
to
them.
Build. Right, right. And that the LIRR, we're basically closing it for all intents and purposes during the summer for 8 weeks. You know, I mean, it's causing companies, we're figuring out what to do, right? Because you just can't have people having to take a 3-hour commute to come to work. But not every entity, based on what they do, are able to let people work remotely.
Well, that's one thing about government or anything that you're doing. There are always new challenges.
Exactly. And that's the, you know, that's the fun and the glory of it. If you went to a job every day that was the same thing,
you'd kill yourself.
You'd kill yourself. Right. And, you know, it's interesting. I just did a thing at Hunter. When I got back from the Institute of Politics at Harvard, I went to Jennifer Rabb, the president of Hunter, who I think is amazing. I said, we shouldn't just have this at Ivy League. Let's do it at Hunter. Let's do it at public schools. And being Jennifer, she did. So we just finished our first semester of that, the Grove Fellowship. And I was one of the leaders, fellows there overseeing students, working with other students. And but in my office hours, it would have been so thrilled, right? Kids were coming in going, so this is the company my friend and I are going to design.
That's awesome.
I was like, that's great, you know? And to some of them, I said, well, get a little further. I'll introduce you to Joanne Wilson. But there were some like good ideas, you know? And to me, it was just so terrific at this public university in the city of New York.
It's amazing.
This Russian immigrant was telling me about how, you know, Travelocity and whatever really weren't cutting the mustard. And she had a way to combine this and that and the other thing. And she and her friend, I was like, well, here's my cell. You just stay in touch.
That's great.
Yeah. And that's like what this city is about. We just need to not forget all that makes it possible for that Russian immigrant to get to the point where she's sitting in a chair talking to somebody about her new company.
Totally go. Yeah. I went up to, it's like on 125th.
Sioux City College?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I spoke with the entrepreneurial class.
Oh, that's great.
And it was amazing. I mean, just walking on that campus, right. And it's like, you know, everyone, Trump is talking about, you know, immigration, right. Immigration. It's just like that entire campus is a sea of immigrant
right.
Faces.
Totally. Totally.
And it's awesome.
Totally. It really is. And the ideas, the energy.
Yeah, it's all good.
It is all good. And that's what we need to, in the busyness of our lives, remember we need to support. And one of the great things about the world we live in now, you know, it used to be a challenge, right? You had to get on a bus, you had to go to Washington, mm-hmm. which is fun too. But now with technology, you can do an online petition, you can send an email, you can tweet at somebody, and any elected official who tells you they don't know how many emails they've gotten, they don't know what their Twitter is doing,
they're
is lying.
Completely. They're paying complete attention.
Right. Yeah, they have a staff member who does that.
Yeah, yeah. No, life has changed.
Yeah.
And it's a good thing.
And it's easier, right, to get your voice heard.
Yeah.
I'm not, like, if your town has a town hall meeting about healthcare, go. Or, you know, if your congressman's not in the right place. But it's just too easy to not send an email, retweet, or tweet at an elected official.
Agreed. And I think that we're going to see a whole slew of young elected officials come into office. I think that I saw one this morning, someone in a group I'm in, her husband's running for Congress upstate. And he's just like, you know what? I'm done.
Yeah.
And it's really exciting to see more people, you know, feel the calling.
I mean, hopefully he'll win. But if not, he'll have done us a great service because he will have given a Republican conservative a really hard time. Which means they'll have to divert resources to that person, which if he doesn't win, and I hope he does, another person will win because there was less money there.
Yeah.
It all is very symbiotic.
Yeah, agreed. All right. Well, thank you for coming
today. Thank
you. This was great.
Yeah.
And I'm very excited to see what happens in your next political life.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Chris Quinn for joining us this week and sharing her insights with us. Wynn does amazing work, and I encourage you to check them out at winnyc.org. Thank you to all our listeners for joining us this week. Stay up to date with Positively Gotham Gal. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter, and you can subscribe to our podcast on SoundCloud or iTunes. And we will see you next week.